Hey, this is Daniel Tardy with the Entree Leadership Team. Thanks so much for listening to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. Hey, did you know that the lessons taught by Dave on this show are a part of our Entree Leadership Master Series event? If you want to hear the entire Entree Leadership curriculum, join Dave at our next Master Series event happening at Disney Swan and Dolphin Resort in Orlando, Florida, October 14th through the 20th. These tickets are selling fast and we only take 200 people. So visit DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership or give us a call at 888-227-3223 to sign up today.
Welcome to Dave Ramsey's Entree Leadership Podcast. This is the place to learn what Dave Ramsey and his team teach about leadership and business. Now, last week we had on John Acuff, which was a fabulous interview. We got a lot of great comments from you guys. So glad that you guys loved that. This week we're doing something a little bit different. This week is kind of a celebration. This week we have got the man himself, Dave Ramsey, in the studio. Welcome to the podcast, Dave. Glad to have you in here.
Well, thank you, Chris. I am so excited. This has been such a wild year, and this thing has become so wildly successful. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. It has been a blast.
I mean, it's been a million downloads.
It's been a million downloads. We started this thing out a year ago just to help people who've come through Entree Leadership, just to kind of get some information out there, had no clue what was going to happen. 1 year later, you folks have made this the number one podcast in leadership on the planet with over a million downloads. So thank you to you guys. So that is very exciting.
Well, Chris, I think it's a testament to two things. We started this thing with the launch of the Entree Leadership book. We made the correct decision to make you the host of it, and you have done a great job. And well, I attribute you. Your hosting and your great interview skills. But you know what? We've ended up with we didn't know how appealing this would be to major leadership names.
We did not.
And how they kind of have lined up for us. I mean, we have had a who's who on here. I mean, a list of people that most of us would love to have dinner with. I mean, like Jim Collins of Good to Great fame. Oh my goodness. Or my buddy Patrick Lencioni. I mean, he's a top-notch author and speaker. Dan Cathy of Chick-fil-A. Tony Dungy. Was on here. I mean, that's pretty cool. Simon Sinek. His stuff is incredible. Of course, Tony Shea over at Zappos. That was a great interview.
That was solid.
And Cordia, man, I mean, hers was a home run.
Oh my gosh.
It was absolutely. You guys, you've had a who's who. You've had a lineup down through here of some of the best. Tim Sanders, Mike Hyatt. The list just goes on and on. And that makes people really want to get this. And I think the lineup, the content has been premium. You've done a great job pulling it out. It's a valuable tool for leadership.
It is. It absolutely is. I love seeing how much people love it through Twitter, through emails, all that. We get so many great comments. And so what we decided to do was bring you in today and just let people go crazy. So we asked people on chrislicurto.com. We asked people through emails. We asked people through newsletters. Give us your questions. What do you want to ask Dave Ramsey? So we've kind of just got a list or a bunch of questions that people have done. So if you're good, we'll just jump right in.
Fire away.
All right. The first one comes from Matt McWilliams. He says, what are some of the most effective ways you have used to collect money owed to you, and how did you deal with late payers early on?
Well, early on, I didn't deal with them very well. Because we were broke, we needed the money, and people that paid late were right next to thieves. I mean, it was we had to get after it, you know? So what I've discovered over the years, and I've taught our entire team, as we're building a business model out, a process of interacting with a customer, the best receivable to have is to not have one. Mm. Just simply get paid. Don't have receivables. Get paid on the front end. Get a deposit. You know, get something like that. The next best receivable to have is, of course, as short a possible term as you can have. And then you set very, very clear, almost damagingly blunt expectations with the customer that if we're going to bill you, don't be one day late. Don't be a day late. Don't even think about it. You know, I own a bunch of rental property, and that's the way we do it with a tenant moving in. You know, listen, we're gonna fix everything. We're going to be great to work with, all that kind of stuff. And we'll communicate with you, but don't be 10 minutes late on the rent. Be 2 days early every time. You're going to pay somebody late. It doesn't need to be us. And so you just set that relationship up on the front end that way, and then you don't have to do collections calls. I don't do situations where we have to do collections calls. Every time we have a situation like like that, that means we've sold the account wrong. We set the expectations at the beginning of the relationship wrong, meaning for somehow they thought they could get away with that crap. Mm-hmm. And that means that we didn't sell it right. So a collections problem is never a collections problem. It's a business model problem, or it's a salesperson that did not do a good job of setting the relationship up right, qualifying the customer properly. Because if you got a qualified customer who understands they're supposed to pay, they'll pay.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's going to be consequences, they're going to pay. And so you just don't get, I'm not going to have the drama of ongoing collections. We're just not going to have it.
Right. And I think the great thing with that is as you set that expectation, it's not like it's with one customer. You're not doing this with one client and other people are going, well, we're not going to do it. Everybody starts to understand this is the way you do business.
Yeah.
And when you do it well, then they still want your business. So
it doesn't say bank on the front of this
right,
building.
That's
you
right.
know, that's the bottom line.
This one comes in from MKOKC. I don't know what that stands for, but that's from crystalcurta.com as well. How should you approach going into a new market? Now, this is something we deal with all the time. Are there best practices you have found when you launch a new station, for instance, that can bring customers up to speed and get them interested in your product where you have never been before?
Well, you're at the education phase of the selling or marketing process at that point. You're trying to let people know who you are. They're not brand familiar with you. And so what your consumer is sitting out there saying is, you want some of my time, my attention, my money. You've got to earn it by giving me something in return. You have to serve me. If you want me, my money, you know, if you're a restaurant and you want me to, you want me to give you money for your restaurant, you have to teach me why that food is awesome and why that service is awesome and why that atmosphere is something I love and the selection of whatever that's in there, you know, that kind of a thing. And so, you know, I think what you're trying to do is educate people as to how you're going to love them well. And that's how you spread your brand and how you grow your tribe, as Seth Godin would say. And so I think that's the big deal you've got to do. And really, that phase of marketing, when you start from cold, meaning they don't know anything about you, and you've got to start, come in, hi, my name's Dave, and I get people out of debt. You know, you got to start from cold there, and you have to build a relationship. It's an expensive and a lengthy process to go all the way from zero to educated, and the relationship is built to where there's ongoing transactions occurring.
Mm. This one in from Dima, I don't even want to mess up your last name, so you know it's you. This came in from the email. How do I keep our bookkeeper that has been here for 7 years and doing the same job over and over from being restless? Like, what big or small projects can I have her do to keep her job more interesting?
Well, the very nature of bookkeeping is it's not interesting.
It is not.
It is, unless you're one of those people.
That you just love it.
If you're one of those people that you actually thrive on details, you get a little bit of a high when the T account balances, when the reconciliation comes up and it rings the bell, ding, ding. You know, there are people that are wired that way, and really that's a hiring thing.
Yeah.
If you've got a highly entrepreneurial, outgoing, impulsive person doing your bookkeeping, you're not only never going to keep them happy, you're not going to get really quality bookkeeping. Mm. So, you know, you've got somebody here who's a little bit more introverted. They're very much a detail person, and they actually get a high out of doing this stuff. Now, me personally, I'm not wired that way. I would just shoot myself.
No,
but
doubt.
But the, you know, I have plenty of people on our team that do this, and I really have never struggled with, and it's a hiring thing, but I've never really struggled with trying to keep them interested, keep them engaged. I don't can't remember going through our accounting team and going, you know, what are we going to do to keep them engaged? I don't remember having that thought. I assume they are, and I check their work to make sure that they are the results of their work. Certainly our CFO is watching that. That's his department. And so I think that's a hiring thing. If the bookkeeper is continually restless, you may have someone in the wrong seat on your bus.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, and I think that's the thing, it sounds like this person has been doing the job because they can do the job. And they're,
I can do it, but it doesn't mean I won't go into a padded cell eventually from doing it.
I think our listeners understand neither you or I will be doing their accounting. and the great thing is that those that we have on our staff that have been working in that area and love that, and because I was blown away. The very first time I met that person or hired that person that was crazy about that stuff, I was like, you really do? Right? I mean, yeah, seriously?
And they think the same thing about us,
right,
by the
absolutely.
Way.
Yeah. So, our folks have been here
but
for...
But, I mean, like, Debbie Schreiner is our accountant, our controller, and Debbie's been with us 12 or 13 years,
something like that.
And, you know, I don't even... It doesn't even occur to me that Debbie's restless. No. It doesn't... She's restless, but probably due to something else. But no.
That's just due to people. So, yeah, okay. She carries a bat. So... this one is from Tyler Casey. Dave, I live in Orange County, California, and started my residential real estate career earlier this year. I've had some early success, but I'm timid to spend a bunch of money on marketing materials and other costly items for my business. Is there a good rule of thumb for a percentage of profit to be put back in the business? Now, let me also say this, Tyler. This is one of those things when we get to Entree Leadership Master Series that we kind of cover a lot of this great stuff. We dig even deeper into stuff like this. So that was a fantastic question. And I also want to say, Tyler, you're brave. So,
yeah, absolutely. It is brave. And it is something that we go into detail on. The thing you're looking for here is two things. One is there's not a set percentage in across all industries where you say, you know, everyone should spend 12.5% on marketing. It's not that way. It is going to be very industry specific. And you can find best practices from other realtors that do a great job. Somebody who is selling so much, you want to be them when you grow up someday. So ask them what percentage of their gross that they're spending on that or their net that they're spending on that. That's one way to look at it. Then the second thing you want to do is you need to know that you're probably going to find some certain marketing things that other people use that don't work for you. Mm-hmm. And when you find that, you don't want to find that by spending extra zeros.
Right.
You want to find that a little bit at a time. And so whatever it is, gear it up slow and find what works in your situation for your deal. And as you find what works, hey, advertising or marketing that works always makes you more than it costs you. And so you just keep filling that gun with bullets then. I mean, you just stack that all the way to the top. But you do want to wade into things. You don't want to go, okay, I studied three people, and the average of those three people is I'm supposed to put 12.5% of my net profits into marketing, and so I'm going to do that. Ready, set, go. And then you discover a whole bunch of crap that doesn't work in your situation. Oh, yeah. No, that could be devastating. So ease in, but ease in intelligently, having studied the best practices of others in your industry.
So start by not spending money at all.
Exactly.
Just go do research.
Exactly.
I can say one thing. I know I don't think we've ever sold a single ticket from a newspaper. And people will put a lot of money, you know, that's finding that one thing that's not going to work. We've discovered a few things that have never worked for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
At least not in the event area. This is from Nancy Hendrickson. What do I do with a key employee who is extremely negative? She is our top sales rep, bringing in the most money, and she is frequently the Debbie Downer in the building. Wah, wah. A finger pointer, non-team player personality. Can I work with her to change that? And if so, how can I?
You have described someone so negatively that I doubt that you can salvage them.
That's tough.
I don't think that this is going to work. But the way that we would handle that here is that we would sit down with them and we would have a very clear conversation. I discovered that I was too nice sometimes, and by being too nice, I was beating around the bush. I wasn't being extremely direct and extremely clear as to what's going on and what the consequences would be. And by being unclear, ultimately what ended up happening was people didn't understand how frustrated I was, and so that was being unkind because it set them up to fail. And that was completely on me. And so my new thing in the last several years has been that to be unclear is to be unkind. So you need to be very clear with Debbie Downer. I mean, you need to sit down with her and say, here's the way it is. I really value your sales, and I think you're a great salesperson, but your attitude and your belligerence and your, negativity that you're throwing around this place far outweighs your sales. So here's the deal. You can stay, but the attitude has to go today. You need to come in here with a smile on your face, and if you've got a problem, you need to cover it with me behind closed doors. I'll be happy to talk to you about problems, but this running around the office bringing everybody down does not offset the fact you're a superstar salesperson. I still will fire you.
Mm-hmm.
And so this stuff will leave, or you will leave. I really care about you. I really do want you here. That's why I'm talking to you and not just firing you. But if you can't turn this around, if this is not an option in your personality, then understand that you're going to leave me with no alternative. The natural consequences of you continuing this behavior is you will be firing yourself. after today. And then the first time they say boo, you pull them in the office and you go, last shot. I mean, instantaneously, you know, you call them out in a meeting. You just, Bill Hybels says, throw foul up. I was talking with your wife, Debbie, one of our EVPs today, and she said, you're just in a meeting when somebody's being belligerent, they're misbehaving. She just says, whoa, whoa, foul, foul. Mm-hmm. We got to take a time out here. And you just address them in front of everybody that we're not going to do that. And then you pull them aside and go, last warning, sign this piece of paper. It's your bring a box paper. Do it again. You bring a box and clean out your desk. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a little bit nicer than that, but I want you folks out there to be very clear, because if I'm on the other side of that, I want to know that I'm hanging off the edge of a cliff. I don't want to think I'm standing up here in the meadow and everything's good, and then all of a sudden a train hits me, you know? And I want to know that I'm about to die here, yeah, you know? And if you tell me that I got a chance to change my attitude, you give them a shot. But I got to tell you, that lady there, there's an arrogance with her that goes with this. And my experience is, I'll give you an 80% chance you don't save her. Yeah. But it'll be up to her if you handle it the way I handled it.
And I would also say that most likely work is escape for something that's happening somewhere else. There's probably something happening in this gal's life that when she comes to work, because she's doing a great job in sales, but she is just, her attitude and everything is probably showing something else that's happening.
Well, and truthfully, the fact that it's gone this far is on you.
Yeah.
Because you should have stopped it when it was the first little blip of this thing. Right. And the fact that she now has gotten away with it, you've created a monster.
Absolutely.
And so now you got to reel this monster back in. And it's hard to save them once you let them get that far.
On top of that, you've been sanctioning incompetence. Yeah. So you've got team members that have seen you do this.
And well, you're viewed as a wuss of a leader.
You're viewed as a wuss. Yeah, absolutely. So get in there, find out what's going on. And if it is something that's personal, offer some counseling. Try
absolutely.
And take care of it.
Sure. Not saying don't love them well, but at the end of the day, the behavior for whatever reason has got to leave the building.
Absolutely.
Love the sinner, hate the sin.
Here's another one that's kind of like that. But what do you do when you work with a group of people who get gazelle intense for finding problems and things to complain about, but get snail intense for finding real solutions? 90% of the time, the complaining 90% of the time is spent complaining, and the other 10%, they're out of the office. To top it off, their family. Signed, exhausted from all the complaining, Dwayne Weaver.
Well, again, you're probably going to fire some people, including family.
And that's something you have had to, as you start bringing family on, that is something that you've had to go through a process of saying, I can't look at them as family. So kind of explain that as well, what that's been like.
Well, I think the breakdown here is that these people think they have a get-out-of-jail-free card. Because they're family, they think they get to do crap that you wouldn't tolerate off of anybody else. And that's where the mistake was made. Now, I don't know. A lot of these family things are so toxic and so intertwined if you can fix them. But the proper way to set up a family situation in business, it doesn't have to be bad. It can be great. Some of the best businesses out there are family businesses. But you need to wear different hats. When you're at work, when I'm here working, I'm the CEO. And I'm the owner of this company, and I wear the CEO hat. I'm the leader of the tribe. And so any of my family that works here is an employee of that. They're a team member here, and they wear that hat. So my daughter Rachel wears the hat here of employee. She is one of our brands and goes out there. My son-in-law Winston wears the hat of employee or team member here. And so when we're at dinner, you know, they're my son-in-law and my daughter. But when we're at work, we've even taught them, and we've learned through some other families, they don't even call me dad at work. They call me Dave. So, hey, Dave.
Which is such a trip to hear.
And it sounds kind of weird. But what it does, if you're sitting in a meeting with your daughter and there's five people in there and she says dad this or dad that, she's played a trump card that changes the whole chemistry of that meeting. Because she just said, I have special access. Mm-hmm. I have special privileges. Just by using that word. But when she says Dave, and she is called to the same level of excellence, the same level of work ethic, she's on the same vacation schedule as everybody else, she doesn't get super privileges, and matter of fact, she maybe even gets less than some, just to prove the opposite, right.
She's had to work her butt off.
She works her tail off. And so, you just change the hats. And so, you know, and then I take my CEO hat off and I put my daddy hat on when it's her birthday or something, you know what I mean? Or we're out to dinner last night, that kind of a thing. That's it. And, you know, the old joke I love about that is the guy whose son was working for him, and his son was horrible and he complained every day. And finally his wife said, "You got to fire him. He's awful." And so he had two hats printed up, dad and boss. And he took his son out for coffee and he put on his boss hat and he said, "Son, I'm wearing my boss hat here. I want you to see I'm your boss and you're really awful at what you do and you can't work for us anymore. You're fired." And he took his hat off and put his dad hat on. He said, "Son, I heard you just lost your job." "So, I'm really sorry. How can I help?" You know, and so, but that's the difference. You know, the boss, the leader is calling you to excellence and to performance and to a time schedule and to deadlines and to whatever it is you're doing with the job description. And the dad loves you unconditionally, regardless. And so you cannot work here and still be my daughter.
Absolutely.
You know, but if you're going to be here, you're going to bring it, baby. You're like the rest of us. You strap the hat on, it's game on, you know?
And I think you also have to, I think the family has to come to an understanding that this is a business that is a responsibility that we have to help people. Whatever your business is, we're trying to help people with our products.
It's not about you.
It's not about us. It's not about the family. It's about the responsibility that we have to take care of people. And if we don't do that well enough, then obviously we don't
and
do
it. And I would
job.
Add on that email a whole other branch of things to run off on is just John Miller's book, QBQ, Question Behind the Question. Because what he's got here is he's got people that aren't taking responsibility.
Right.
And they're just wanting to throw stones. And so what I teach people to do, as soon as they pick up a stone, I say, "What are you building with that? You know, you gotta build me a wall with that baby, okay?" And so, you know, and so if I catch you holding a stone, meaning you come in my office to gripe about something, I'll make you head of the committee to fix the deal.
There you go.
You know, and so, you know, "We got a real problem with parking around here, so you need to work with the CFO and figure out the parking plan. That'll be great. And don't bring crap in my office and expect to leave it there. I'm going to send you back out the door with something to do about it." And so start assigning people, and not just arbitrarily and not smart. Right. I mean, literally, if there's a legitimate problem with the computer system and the team's going to sit around and gripe about it, say, "Okay, who's going to fix it?
Right.
Which one of you are going to spearhead the team to get this fixed?" And then I'm going to follow up with you in 2 weeks, and I want to know what you've done, because now it's on you that it's not fixed, and we're going to turn this thing around. You do that about 10 times, people will quit griping because they get assigned to stuff.
I can pretty much guarantee if somebody's griping about it, they have researched everything they can about it. So they know more about it than anyone. All right, here we go. How do you keep senior staff focused on the big issues the business is facing and not getting bogged down in these smaller matters brought to them daily by staff? To build on that question, how do you convince lower-level staff to not come to their leaders with problems that they themselves can solve? That is by Eric in Marquette, Michigan.
Well, Steve Brown talks about this. We teach this in Entree Leadership Master Series always. Steve Brown is a great leadership trainer a couple decades ago, and he says when someone comes into your office with a problem that they should have fixed, you just look at them as having a monkey on their shoulder. And when they say, "We've got a problem," that monkey jumps off their shoulder standing in the middle of your desk. Right? And your job as a leader is when they leave your office, they need to take their monkey with them. Meaning, it sounds like this. They come in, they say, "You know, the copier's broken." "Well, I look like a copier repairman? I mean, what are you doing in here? Tell me the copier's broken. Give me a break. You need to go find somebody to get the copier fixed." But if they come in and say, "We've got a problem," okay, what are the solutions? "Well, I don't have any." Okay, go get me some solutions and come back with the problem. Because if you come in here with a problem with no solutions, you're just griping.
Mm-hmm.
If you come in here with a problem and solutions, now you're a dedicated member of the team. I want you around. You're adding value. And then you teach them how to pick the correct solution over a period of time. That's called mentoring. 3 or 4 times we go through this. And eventually, then they're kind of just kind of walk by your office and say, "Hey, there was a problem and I fixed it." And, you know, and it's just done. But what's happening is they don't want to take ownership emotionally. They won't be grown-ups. They won't be spoon-fed sugar like children. And so when we all want to do that, it's mental laziness is what it is. It's intellectual laziness, emotional laziness. And when you make them be grown-ups and face this stuff, send them back out the door to fix it, they'll fix it. That's thing one. Then thing two is most leaders struggle with the tactical, the day-to-day hand-to-hand combat things, overtaking their ability to do strategic thought. I struggle with that. Most entrepreneurs struggle with that. We're big doers more than we are big dreamers. We have big dreams, but we don't sit around a lot of time thinking about how to make that dream happen. We're just in the ditch digging. Mm-hmm. You know, we're down here getting the weeds out and cleaning things up and making sure the water's flowing. We're in here getting the work done, you know? And so what you've got to do is you have to train yourself, your upper level staff, your leadership team to think more and more and more strategically. If you say we want to go to Florida, the first goal is you got to know where Florida is. You know, you really have to know where it is. And that's strategic thought. The tactical is which interstates you do to connect. And okay, we're going to go down, you know, I-75, and we're going to turn on I-24. And, you know, we're going to do, you know, that's the tactical. But you have to have started with the vision, the goal, and literally know where that is before you go about the business of how to get there. Otherwise, you'll freaking end up in Arizona. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that happens in business all the time. People look up and they go, man, I'm 7 years down into a product line here I don't even like, and it's not that profitable. The customers don't love it. We just did it because it was there and we were busy. That's tactical with no strategic. And so you've got to step back and look from the 30,000-foot view ever so often, and that's a matter of training yourself discipline-wise to spend some of your time in thought, some of your time in prayer, some of your time strategically, some of your time spending on philosophical issues and dream issues for the whole company.
This one is from Brandon Peterson, and I love this because we've actually kind of gone through this. We have gone through this ourselves recently. How does an entree leader handle team members who have been reassigned during a downsizing or reorganization when their previous compensation does not match their new job responsibilities? Is it right for the team member to maintain their pay level when the reassignment is not done for disciplinary reasons? What about maintaining a spirit of fairness among peers who would be paid at the normal, he puts, lower rate for doing similar work? This is a real-life, right-now problem in our department. I look forward to hearing your thoughts. And we've had a big reorganization.
We have.
So,
And in the process, we had several leaders several people that moved into leadership roles. Several people moved out of roles into different roles. And a few of those, but very few of them, have been a situation where they moved, quote, down.
Down.
That is a harder one. Our first goal, if it's not for disciplinary or performance reasons, is to try to maintain their income. What other people in that department think shouldn't have anything to do with it, because they shouldn't know what the other person's income is.
Right.
We don't tell people what the person next to them makes. That's what's known as Nunya business.
Nunya business.
You know, and so we don't go into that. And so none of the people sitting here helping us do this podcast in the booth in there, the four of them, none of the four of them know what the other one makes. Or they shouldn't, anyway.
Well, they were talking about it earlier, at least what Becky makes.
Well, that's because
she... Which it needs to be more than Chris Mefford. So
absolutely, yeah. We need to give her a raise to make sure that happens. So, but anyway, the you know, that kind of a thing. So there shouldn't be any, quote, comparison that way. But in your mind, as the leader, you know, I'm paying one person $50,000, everybody else in that department makes $30,000 because we moved them out of a $50,000 role. How do we do that? I think that... I probably would sit down with that person and, you know, I've actually never done that.
Yeah, we haven't had the down.
I've not had the down move because the only reason someone would move down around here would have been performance. And in that case,
they wouldn't be here.
In that case, I don't move them down. I just move them out.
Yeah.
So I'm not real good about demoting people. As a matter of fact, I'm real good about not doing that. I don't demote them. I fire them. If that's the case, if they can't perform, I don't want them doing something else. I will move them to a different seat on the bus. That's not a demotion. What if the pay was different there? I think we might help them bridge the gap and gradually move the pay to fit the position. And say, listen, if you make this move from X position to Y position, it doesn't pay as much. But it's really what we've got right now because your position's been done away with. Because that wasn't due to you being underperforming, we're going to cover it for a while, but I'm not going to make you a 10-year promise on that. But for a year, maybe I'll do that, and we'll see if something else opens up around here to move you back into a different pay. But long term, know that you're going to be moving into what this position pays. I will move you down.
Mm-hmm.
But I would make it gradual, and I would always make errors on this type of thing on the side of generosity, because that person is affected a whole lot more than I'm affected by that discussion.
I think you have to ask yourself the question. If this, you know, with this role being eliminated, would I hire this person again for another position? If you can say yes, Man, I love the person in the role that they were in. They were a great team member. They did a great job there. So now I'm looking to help them in this process, get them to a place where they can get back up to those dollars. If the answer is no, well, then why are you moving them?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And I think the golden rule is the answer here on a lot of HR ethical type issues, compensation issues. Treat other people like you'd want to be treated. Mm-hmm. If I was in that role, how would I want to be treated? Well, I really wouldn't expect you to pay me twice what the position pays.
Right.
Perpetually.
Sure.
But I would appreciate the
opportunity.
And I'd appreciate the opportunity to move to something else in the near future if something else opens up, given that I'm used to making that.
Absolutely. This is from Jeff Gunther. What's Dave's opinion on outside investors? Is taking investment money equal to taking on debt?
No, it's probably worse.
Yes, because you don't just take on money.
Yeah, you now gave up ownership. I mean, you can't ever pay that off. You're stuck. So no, I don't bring in angels. I don't bring in angel investors. I don't believe in that. I have found that when I have been tempted to look at something like that in years past, and it was many years ago since I've been tempted, but that it usually means I need to stop and say, I need to be willing to grow slower. The tortoise wins. One of the things that infects people is that we think if we're not growing at astronomical rates, we're not successful. When it comes to business, if you're open, if you're still open next year, you're successful. Mm. Because most of them aren't open next year.
Right.
And so just staying open makes you successful. And if you can add some minor growth rate to it, or major growth rate, but you don't have to go from, you know, a $500,000 a year gross revs company to a $50 million gross revs company in 20 minutes. You just don't.
But if you figure that one out, let us know.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I really would recommend you grow slower. One of the things that destroys businesses is trying to grow too fast.
This is from John Reitz. What are some steps I can take to determine the best initial cost for my services?
Best practices of other people doing the services. Study other people in your market, if you can study them, if they'll let you study them. But if they're not in your market, another city, another metroplex, similar in size and psychographic and demographic. Meaning I might not compare Buffalo, New York with Nashville, Tennessee, even right. though they're similar in size. It's a different psychographic, different mentality. But I might compare, Buffalo with Cleveland, or Nashville with Austin, you know, or whatever. Austin, Texas. But I mean, those kinds of things. So try to find people in your industry that are doing something, and it's pretty easy to do. Just start Googling it; it'll pop up everywhere. And a lot of them have a fee schedule right there on their website. So whatever it is they're doing, try to find out what they're doing, and then just experiment with starting it slightly below that, and get some business on the books, and then start. Once you've got some business on the books, start raising your fees.
This is in from Brian in Franklin, Massachusetts. Dave, it seems like your business went from a card table in your living room to where it is now through several years of rapid growth, which, well, I don't know if I would say rapid, but we've had some great movements. Did you ever have a year that you didn't make a profit? What advice do you have for a very small business for people struggling to make ends meet?
We have never had a year that we didn't make a profit. We have had a couple of years that we came close.
Very close.
The growth is weird because, I mean, in a sense, in 20 years ago, it started on a card table in my living room, and now there's 350 of us, and we're a major national brand in our areas of expertise, household name in that area for that matter. And so that seems like that's overnight success, but it's not. It's 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, and so, percentage growth has never been astronomical. We've had good growth compared to large businesses, but large businesses grow at a slower rate most times. When you're making $6 and you have 100% growth rate, you made $12. I mean, it really isn't. That's where it starts, you know? And so, we had 100% growth rate right off the bat, you know? And we did. And for a couple of years
there. You went from a card table to a desk in a basement. So
yay,
that was
yeah,
a big
breakthrough.
Step up.
Had two telephones, you know? I mean, it was a breakthrough and a copier that worked and all that. So, yeah, that's exactly what you do. And so, No, it's not really been exponential growth. It never in the moment has felt like it was out of control growth. We have tried to be steady in our growth and tried to be deliberate and are always looking for things to do better, bigger, and help more people. But we've never had things where we were just out of control and felt like we couldn't keep up infrastructure-wise and that kind of a thing. That's the stuff that sinks businesses. Don't do that.
Absolutely. All right, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to wrap this up, and you're going to hang around, and we're going to do the extra interview for the chrislicurtle.com readers, the extended version of this. So, folks, if you want to hear that, go to chrislicurtle.com and hit subscribe. You get that. But what I'd love to wrap this up with is talk a little bit about our Entree Leadership Master Series that's coming up in Orlando, because that's coming up soon.
Well, we're really excited about that. That has been a product that is rich. It's a fun thing for our team to do. We enjoy bringing that material. And it's a week-long, very high-end event in a resort setting. It, in a sense, it becomes a business retreat where you get away with other business people. And, you know, we sit on couch and have a cup of coffee, or we're sitting out there in the lobby talking at midnight. And, you know, and we just all are getting into each other's businesses. And we only allow 200 people there. I'm there the whole week. My wife's there the whole week. I teach the vast majority of the lessons, the sessions, and I'm out there every day intermingling with people. Our team, our leadership team is in there, a bunch of them meeting with different people. They're there to help you and meet with you. It's just a very hands-on. And you leave, you know, a lot of people have left saying, I got an MBA and I learned more in this week than I learned in my MBA.
Gosh, I've had that so many times. People have told me that.
Yeah, we hear it all the time. And so it's an exciting, exciting thing. And it is in October this year in Orlando, the Swan and Dolphin in October. And, you know, you need to go to EntreeLeadership.com. We've got just a few spots left. It always sells out. And people come from all over the world to go. It's a blast.
All right, folks. So once again, thank you so much. You, the listener, have made this the number one leadership podcast on the planet. So we appreciate that. 1 year, million downloads. We know that's because you've been telling a lot of people about this. And so we really thank you. We hope this is something that you enjoyed hearing. So once again, Dave, thanks for coming in and doing this.
Congratulations again, Chris. Oh, you've absolutely done a great job with this.
Thank you very much. And we are going to move on. We're going to stick around and do the chrislicurtle.com interview and wrap things up. So I'm going to do something that we have not done so much before, but we get so many people that love our fantastic Becky Powell, who does an incredible job with this podcast. So this time I'm going to go to you, Becky. This has been exciting. This has been really, this is a year that you have created because of all the hard work that you've done, of all the amazing things that you've done behind the scenes to make this thing even happen. We've had a million downloads because of the work that you've done. What do you think of the Entree Leadership Podcast?
Well, it's just been really exciting to see all of these great guest interviews that we've been able to have on the show, along with the lessons from Dave, the fact that we can make those accessible to listeners for free. And the response we've been getting from listeners has been tremendous. I'm just excited for what's ahead, and you know, growing that listener interaction is what I'm looking forward to. And that's evident in this episode that we've had with Dave, with the question and answers, and the fact that we've taken questions from the listeners and Dave is answering them. So I'm excited about more interaction with our listeners.
That seems to be, according from what we see, that seems to be one of the favorite things of our listeners, of you guys that are listening, is this interaction, being able to have the opportunity to ask some questions, that kind of stuff. When we do the Q&A sessions, that's always a fun time. But yeah, this has just been a blast, and you have done a fantastic job.
Well, thanks, Chris.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So folks, once again, thanks to you. You are who make this happen. Even though I just said Becky is, I guess it's a joint effort, isn't it? But, if it wasn't for you guys listening, if it wasn't for you downloading, if it wasn't for you telling people, then we sure wouldn't be doing this. We do this because we love to help you guys. Coming up this Thursday at 9 a.m. Central, we will be hosting the Entree Leadership Live Chat. Come stop by for an hour to kick off your workday and learn from fellow Entree leaders as well. Did we mention that this is completely free? In case we didn't, it's completely free. Visit DaveRamsey.com/EntreeLeadership this Thursday and join in on the discussion. Also, remember, follow us on Twitter @EntreeLeadership or at Chris Locurto, L-O-C-U-R-T-O. Send us your emails at podcast@entreleadership.com. And do not forget, every single day, get your daily leadership once again for free at chrislocurto.com. Go on over there, hit subscribe, and you will get all of those every single day, as well as the podcast and the extended interviews for the chrislocurto.com readers. I will be hitting the road starting in September, traveling to Indianapolis, Nashville, Phoenix, Houston. Those are going to be with Dave and John Acuff doing the Entree Leadership One Day. If you have not been to a one-day event in the past, these events are amazing. They are incredible. And we've got a new version of the Entree Leadership One Day that we're going to be doing. So make sure that you get to those. If you want to hear all of the Entree Leadership lessons from Dave and or myself, either one, depending upon which event you want to go to, attend our next Entree Leadership Master Series, October 14th through the 20th in Orlando. It's going to be at Disney's Swan and Dolphin Resort. At this event, Dave will not only teach you how to take your business to the next level, but he will also be personally interacting with you over the course of the week. Myself, I will be there. I will teach a few of those lessons, but I will spend most of my time ripping businesses apart, one-on-one coaching sessions. That is what I do. The event is limited, obviously, to 200 people, so make sure that you head on to entreleadership.com and get that information. All right, so that puts another Entree Leadership podcast in the books. We are so glad that you guys joined us for this. As always, I've got to thank the people that make this happen every single time. Chris Mefford, our producer. Colin Fatke, our audio engineer. Becky Powell, our princess of podcasts.
That sounds good. I like that.
I like Princess. That one's nice. And, of course, Dave Ramsey. Folks, thank you for joining us. Take this information, change your leadership, change your life, change your business, and make sure that you join us on the next Entree Leadership Podcast.
Folks, right now is the best time in history to operate or start a small business. If you're ready to take your leadership to the next level or start your own company, then join me, Dave Ramsey, at Walt Disney World's Swan and Dolphin Resort on October 14th through the 20th for our Entree Leadership Master Series. At this event, I'll teach you everything you ever wanted to know about building and growing a profitable business. You'll also experience personal leadership coaching from our executive team. Folks, you won't find this stuff in some college business class. This is 20 years in the trenches of leading and actually running a business. It's based on my New York Times number one bestseller, Entree Leadership. So bring your spouse, bring your team, but you better hurry. These events are limited to only 200 people, and they always sell out early. Call the Entree Leadership team at 888-22-PEACE. That's 888-227-3223 or online at DaveRamsey.com.